Tonight's scripture comes from the book of Luke, chapter 12, verses 13 through 21, and verses 32 through 34. Someone in the crowd said to him, "Teacher, tell my brother to divide the inheritance with me." Jesus replied, "Man, who appointed me a judge or an arbiter between you?" Then he said to them, "Watch out. Be on your guard against all kinds of greed. Life does not consist in an abundance of possessions." And he told them this parable. The ground of a certain rich man yielded an abundant harvest. He thought to himself, "What shall I do? I have no place to store my crops." Then he said, "This is what I'll do. I will tear down my barns and build bigger ones, and there I will store my surplus grain. And I'll say to myself, 'You have plenty of grain laid up for many years. Take life easy, eat, drink, and be merry.'" But God said to him, "You fool, this very night your life will be demanded from you. Then who will get what you have prepared for yourself? This is how it will be with whoever stores up things for themselves but is not rich toward God. Do not be afraid, little flock, for your Father has been pleased to give you the kingdom. Sell your possessions and give to the poor. Provide purses for yourselves that will not wear out, a treasure in heaven that will never fail, where no thief comes near and no moth destroys. For where your treasure is, there your heart will be also." The word of the Lord.
Well, again, good evening. We are looking this Lent at a number of texts from the Gospels. And in many ways, Lent is concerned with the question, what does it mean to really live? What does it mean to live a life that is richly fulfilling, that's deeply human, that is life-giving? As we said, I guess last week, Lent, actually, that word comes from an old English phrase, which simply means springtime. And it's a time when we recognize that our lives, perhaps often, are lacking in that sort of vibrancy, that vitality, that beauty that spring is all about. And sometimes, without even noticing it, our lives become a lot like the winter tundra. They become dry and withered and brown and dying and ugly. And so what we need is springtime in the soul. And that's what we've been doing this Lenten season, is looking at those practices, those disciplines of the Christian life that can potentially bring something of spring back to us, to our hearts and our lives. And this week we come to the practice of generosity. Now, it's a bit different from some of the other disciplines that we've looked at, because generosity is not just a discipline. It's also an end, something that we want to be. I think most of us see generosity as an attractive attribute, something we'd like to be known as. And yet, you can't become a generous person without the discipline of, or the practice of, generosity. So we want to look at it both as a practice and as a goal in our lives. And through Jesus' teaching, we want to see, on the one hand, the dangers and folly of failing to be generous. Then secondly, we want to see the call to generosity, the beauty of generosity. And finally, we want to look at what is it that empowers us to be genuinely generous people. Because even if you see it as attractive, we can't always pull it off. So what enables us to get to that place? So first then, Jesus shows us the dangers of failing to be generous. Look at verse 15. He says, "Be on your guard against all kinds of greed. Life does not consist in the abundance of possessions." You know, many foul behaviors that you and I engage in are readily apparent to us. If we steal, we know we've stolen. If we lie, we generally know that we've done that. If we've been unfaithful to a spouse, we're aware of it. There's no mistaking it. And yet greed is not like that. Greed's a bit trickier. There is no line that can be drawn where we know that we've definitively crossed it into the place of actually being filled with avarice. And so greed sneaks up on us. We have an inability to see it. It disguises itself as many other things. In fact, very few people think they're greedy. Instead, we say, "Well, I'm just being frugal." Or we say, "I'm being wise with my resources." Or we say, "I'm just enjoying the fruit of my labor." And they're all plausible explanations for the use of our money, but we might be deceived. We might be being greedy. And so we have to be on our guard. We have to be vigilant. That's what Jesus is saying here. Be on the lookout. Watch out for greed. It's difficult to detect. It's deceptive. It's all the same, deeply corrosive, and therefore you need to be able to see it. Now, it goes without saying that to be without money is hardly to be in an enviable position. If you're a person, and I certainly have known many folks at various stages in their life who don't know how they're going to pay the bills at the end of the month, or even more so, know for sure that they're not going to be able to do so, and they're going to have to make a choice between paying one bill and let another one go, well, that's hardly an enjoyable position to be in. It's not something that anyone wants to experience. It affects a person adversely. A couple of years ago, the University of Princeton did a study on people's happiness and their wealth. And not surprisingly, they found that an increase in salary did increase a person's overall sense of happiness. But, and here's the catch, only up to a point. Only up to a point did an increase in salary actually promote an increased sense of happiness. Once people had their basic needs met, once they were able to save something, once they were able to enjoy some of the basic nice things of life, some simple vacations, then to increase one's salary did not appreciably increase anyone's sense of happiness. As a matter of fact, sometimes it made people more miserable. Again, Jesus says, life doesn't consist in the abundance of possessions. But we also need to recognize that for most people, money is about far more than meeting our basic needs, which is why we are rarely satisfied with how much we have. Think about it. Our wealth, whether we have a little or whether we have a lot or whether we have something in between, plays a unique role in our lives. It's actually one of the most powerful forces in our lives. Why? Because it's about security. It's about power. It's about pleasure. It's about status, significance. It stands for all those things, plays that role in our lives. In other words, money for most of us is never just money. And because it plays these functions in our lives, it does have a unique power over us. It's worth noting that whereas other things we know when enough is enough, it rarely is the case with our resources. One author writes, when we're healthy, we don't generally strive for extreme health. After a good meal, we're sated. We don't order another filet mignon to augment our satisfaction. Yet, he says this, our pause button shorts out when it comes to money. It doesn't increase our satisfaction, but we want more. That's the way it works in our life. And it's clear from this parable that that dynamic has been around for a long, long time. Look at it. There's a farmer, and he has such an accumulation of wealth here in the form of grain that he can't store it all. So he decides to tear down the barns that he has and build bigger ones so that he'll be able to store all of the grain that he has. What is he after? What's he after? Well, he tells us. He says, I'll say to myself after I've done this, you have plenty of grain laid up for many years. Take life easy, eat, drink, and be merry. He's after security. He's after pleasure. He's after probably also significance. And you know, there's no notion here that his wealth is ill-gotten. He clearly thinks his pursuit is legitimate. But Jesus challenges his approach, right? On what basis? On what basis does Jesus challenge this approach of building bigger barns, getting more and more stuff? What's wrong with it? Well, the first thing he does is challenges the fact that it brings security at all. You fool, this very night your life will be demanded from you. Then who will get what you have prepared for yourself? What's Jesus saying? He's saying the thought that we have control of our lives and that there is any genuine security in our lives, in and through our own efforts, is utterly illusory. Life is fragile. We're not in charge. So much is beyond our control, and to think and behave differently is foolish. You fool, says Jesus. Now, that should not be construed as suggesting that you should never save money or plan for your future. That's not what this passage is saying. But be careful, because it does have implications for how you save and how you spend and how you live. Because to the degree that you believe that security is not really in your own hands, well, that to that degree, you won't be obsessive about money and you won't be anxious about it, overly anxious about it. You'll hold on to it more lightly. It won't have such a tight grip on you, or you such a tight grip on it. You'll be willing, when you see needs around you, to let go of it. You won't need to feel like you have to absolutely hold on to it for dear life. And you won't be excessive in your accumulation of it. Of course, the wise person will also realize that not only is their security illusory, but in as much as wealth gets you friends, those friends actually may not be that true. And they also recognize that however much others might look up to you and think because you have wealth, that you're a person of significance, you're a person of status, well, a person who gets reality recognizes that money doesn't make them any more important or any more significant than anyone else. Still, we're seduced by those things, each of them. However, true as those realities are, Jesus has a more critical thing that he's after here, and that is that from his perspective, this farmer is not taking into account the true nature of reality. In other words, greed has caused him to miscalculate the meaning of life, and that's Jesus' chief concern. This is God's world, Jesus wants to get across, and we're uniquely and wonderfully those who bear his image. And this behavior of the farmer is not in keeping with those realities, that this is God's world and that we are made to mirror him, to be his copycats in the world. We are not to be, in other words, rich towards ourselves. We're to be rich toward the God who made us. And we're to live in keeping with how he made us. Now, even the Greeks knew that being rich towards ourselves was a destructive habit to engage in. And so they gave us the tale of Narcissus. If you know the tale, Narcissus is a guy who is, at least in his early years, rather fetching looking. And one day he's running through the woods and he catches his reflection in a pool. And immediately he's transfixed and he stares and he's caught in the gaze and he can't break free. He just keeps on staring at himself. And then over time, what happens to him is he begins to atrophy. He begins to waste away until ultimately he's utterly destroyed. Now, the key thing to know about that myth and the truth that it holds out is that Narcissus is not particularly taken by his beauty. Because if that was what was going on, you see, eventually as he atrophied, as he wasted away and he got uglier and uglier, he would eventually have been able to break away his gaze. He would have been set free. But that doesn't happen. He just continues to gaze and gaze at himself until eventually he's just nothing. And that's what greed does to us. It's corrosive. It hollows us out. It is imprisoning. A person wrapped up in themselves makes a very small package indeed. It is the very opposite of living large, no matter how many possessions or how big your house. Corrosive. But that's not the only thing that those who are rich towards themselves fail to understand about reality. You see, Jesus' parables are ultimately, all of them, every one of them, about the kingdom that has come in him. In other words, with every parable, Jesus is saying, with my arrival in the world, God is doing a new thing. This is the event of history, and on my appearance, history has taken a huge turn. The kingdom has come with me, and that kingdom is all about God setting things right and setting us right, our own hearts right with God, and it's about restoring us to our true humanity. That's what the coming of Jesus into the world was all about. His purpose of it, at least in part, was to restore us to our true selves. And our living as our true selves is bound up with the call to being a generous people. So you see, not only do we need to see the danger of greed, but we also need to see the beauty of generosity. That is what being rich towards God is all about, being a generous person. It's about giving oneself to God's purposes of healing and mending the world. To not live generously is tantamount to believing the kingdom hasn't come. The two behaviors, or that behavior, is that closely identified with the coming of the kingdom. To not be generous is essentially to reject everything that Jesus is about. Now, Eugene Peterson, who has written the Bible translation, The Message, is actually, from my perspective, a much better author. He's written many books, and in one particular book, a book called Run with the Horses, which is about the prophet Jeremiah, he lays out this beautiful illustration of what generosity is all about. He says that there was this time he was out in the wilderness, out on a hike, and he saw this mother bird making these huge, sweeping, soaring arcs to gather food for her young infants, three of them, that were on a branch nearby. And he says it was just his good luck that on that particular day that he saw this taking place, that the mother decided it was time for the three smaller birds to learn to fly. And so she lighted on the branch next to them. And before the first one could ever take notice, she gave it a little nudge, and it lost its grip and fell off the branch. And somewhere between the branch and the water below, it started pumping its wings, and it took off into the sky. The second one, he said, followed suit. But by the time it came for the third one, it had caught on. And so it started to hold on bulldog tenacious to this branch for dear life. And the mother kept on nudging it and nudging it. Eventually, she did it hard enough that the bird lost its grip for a moment. But only a moment, and it swung upside down, and now it was grasping by its talons. And so the mother began to peck at the bird's feet. Until the pain of holding on apparently became greater than the fear of letting go. And that bird, too, let go of its grips, fell, but then started pumping its wings and took off into the sky. And Peterson, in looking at that and thinking about that, says, you know, birds have feet, they can walk. And birds have talons, they can grasp. But the characteristic activity of birds is flight. I mean, a bird that doesn't fly is a pitiful excuse for a bird. What's a chicken, for crying out loud? What's an ostrich, you know? Do they really belong in the bird family? I think not. They don't fly. No, the characteristic activity of birds is flight. That's what they do best. But Peterson goes on to say, you know, the characteristic activity of human beings is giving. That's what we do best. It's the air into which we were born. It's the action that was designed in us before our birth. Giving is the way the world is. God gives himself, and he makes no exceptions for any of us. And this is the quote that's in the front of your bulletin. It says, we're given away to our families, to our neighbors, to our friends, to our enemies, to the nations. Our life is for others. That is the way creation works. And though we sometimes cling to those things that we think are going to make us secure for dear life, we look pathetic and beraggled doing it. It's no way to live. To think that somehow by holding on to things for dear life, we can become our true selves. We can't. We weren't meant to find our security within ourselves. No, we were meant for spending and being spent, for giving ourselves away to others. And the sooner we start, the better. For eventually, we're going to have to give up our very lives, give them away. But only as we give do we enter into that sweeping, soaring life of grace that God calls us to. Now, as Jesus lays it out here, he tells us that this giving starts with generosity towards the poor. It says, sell what you have and give alms to the poor. That is, our fellow image bearers who are the special objects of God's attention. They're mentioned on nearly every page of the scripture, the widow, the orphan, the alien, the immigrant, the poor, that they have God's special attention and they're to have ours as well because they are on the front lines of what's wrong with our world, the brokenness of our world, and we are together to give ourselves to address those things. But our giving doesn't stop there. We not only give our wealth, but we also, well, we give so many things, right? We give forgiveness. We give encouragement. We give to our spouses and friends who sometimes we don't feel are holding up their end of the bargain. Sometimes we give notice to a person who's harmed us because that's the right thing to do in order to set the relationship right, even though sometimes it's a hard thing to do. And of course, we give the gospel, that which gives life and enables others to be their true selves as well. So if we're to be fully human, not giving is not an option. And it's only when we give that we become something beautiful for God, which was Malcolm Muggeridge's phrase for Mother Teresa, her life, something beautiful for God. Ours meant to be the same thing. But to be generous is not only beautiful. Jesus also says here that it's wise. In the same way that be greedy is foolish, to be generous is wise. Why? Well, look at verse 33. Provide purses for yourselves that will not wear out, a treasure in heaven that will never fail, where no thief comes near and no moth destroys. Now, contrary to popular opinion, you know what Jesus is saying here? He's saying you can take it with you. We often say that you can't, but actually Jesus is saying the very opposite of that. It's as if he's saying, hey, you have a chance or the opportunity of investing in one of two banks. You can invest in the Bank of the United States, or you can invest in the Swiss bank. In one of those banks, you will certainly lose it all. In the other, phenomenal returns are guaranteed. In other words, we need to recognize this isn't just God talk. Jesus is saying, no, this is serious. You can actually lay up treasures either on earth, which is about being rich towards yourself, or you can be rich towards God, which is to lay up treasures in heaven. And when you get a picture of eternity and you recognize that life is short, and that what we really hope for, what we long for, what we await is the life of the world to come, that there will be a currency, and I must admit the currency is a bit mysterious, the nature of it, but there will be a concern currency that we will be rich in. Perhaps it's joy. Perhaps it's something else. I don't know. But Jesus says you can actually store it up. You can take it with you. It's something objective and real. And a person is a fool to put money in a bank that will not last when he or she can put it in one that is no risk and high yield. Of course, most of us eventually come to know, right, that being generous is a good thing. Even if we're not very good at it, we recognize it's attractive. It's a more joyful way of life. But we have a hard time pulling it off all the same, right? We can think it's very desirable, but boy, is it hard to do. How do we get there? You know, many of us in getting a raise, if we're honest, don't become increasingly generous with that raise. We tend to give more, but at the same percentage we always have had. So our needs haven't increased, but we find new things to buy. Our generosity doesn't increase. The buzz we may get from buying new things, it may be a momentary buzz, but it's a buzz all the same and we like it. How do we break free from that? Giving it up is not easily done. Where do we find the power to pursue radical generosity? And that's the last thing we want to look at. And the key is in verse 32. Look there. Jesus says, do not be afraid, little flock, for your Father has been pleased to give you the kingdom. That's a lovely verse. Do not be afraid, little flock. Your Father's been pleased to give you the kingdom. It is the language of tenderness, and it's the language of being treasured. You see, we can only give up our earthly treasure away. We can only give it away when it's no longer our chief treasure. Inherently, you hold on to what you treasure the most. And money wants that place in our life. But here, Jesus uses this particular language to remind us that we actually are treasured, that we're treasured by God. We all know what it is to treasure something. All of us at least have some things. Maybe they're heirlooms, maybe there's something that you saved up a great deal for, but something that's precious to you. And so you tend to protect it at all costs. You make sure that it's kept free from danger. You keep it out of harm's way. And you actually enjoy the thing. It matters to you. It's something that is a precious possession. It's treasured. And in using this language, Jesus reminds us that that is who we are before God. That's astonishing, of course, when you think of sort of the greedy, selfish, ungrateful people that we are. But that's what we are all the same. And you may not feel like you're worthy of being treasured, or you may not feel like a treasure, but you are. You are treasured all the same. That's what grace is all about. God looks at us and treasures us, so much so that God gives his only son. There's that giving again, right at the center of the being of the God of the universe, the God who created us. He gives his only son in order that we might become sons and daughters of his precious possession, those who are treasured by him. And Jesus on the cross is willing to give up being treasured for our sakes. The one who was most treasured by the Father gives up that status, is forsaken in order that we might be brought close, brought near, protected, doted on, cared for deeply. He treasures us. And you see, that's where true security and significance come from. That's where your security really lies, in knowing that God's got your back beyond your possible imaginings, he does. Paul puts it like this. He says, having spared not his own son, won't he graciously give you everything you need? In other words, you can rest easy. You can be secure. And of course, it gives us a sense of significance as well, a greater significance than any amount of wealth could ever give us. You see, to give generously only happens when treasure is no longer your treasure, but God is. And yet God only becomes your treasure when you realize how treasured you are by him. You know, perhaps no gospel account gets that across more than the account of the woman who comes to Jesus in Mark 14 and just before Jesus' death, breaks a bottle of expensive perfume and puts it on his feet. And we're told in that passage that it was a year's wages, a year's salary. And actually, some of the disciples scoff at it. They say, what a waste. That could have been used for the poor. But actually, in this case, Jesus says, no, she's done right. She's wasted herself on me. Why? Because she knows herself to be treasured. It's gotten across to her. And so once she knows that, it becomes easy for her to give up her treasure, to give up herself, to spend and be spent on behalf of Jesus. We go from asking not how much do I have to give, to asking how much can I give? How much can I get away with giving? Not how much can I get away with holding on to. We become a generous people, perhaps even daring God with our very generosity to take care of us. Now, that may seem like an odd thing to do, but of course it's happened again and again in the history of the church where people have laid it all on the line. They were so sure that they were treasured by God, so sure that he was their security, that they were significant completely in him, that they could give it all away. Listen, I'd be remiss if I didn't end with a couple of very practical thoughts on generosity. Some quick things to think about. One is, if you're going to grow in this practice of generosity, start actually by planning to be generous. We sometimes think it's more spiritual to be spontaneous, but I promise you, spontaneous givers, even if they feel like they're being more spiritual, always give less than planned givers do. Secondly, work towards giving a tithe. Maybe you're already there, maybe you're not. That's the traditional amount that throughout the history of the church and throughout the history of God's people, people have set aside as the basic minimum to give. You may have a hard time getting there. It may take some work, but that's the first thing to strive for, to give 10% of your income away yearly. But then what I want to encourage you to do is not stop there. And the question becomes, well, how much should we give? And you know, the best answer I've ever heard is simply this. Came after a long series of articles on wealth and on giving. And the person said, so how much should we give? The answer, more. That's simple. Try to give a little bit more away this next year by percentage, not simply an amount, but by percentage than you gave away the year before. I promise you, as you start doing that, it will spill out over into the other areas of your life in which we're called to be generous. And it will be your joy. You'll be freer. You'll be more fulfilled. You'll be really living. Let's pray. Oh, Lord our God, we thank you for this call to be generous. We thank you for how Jesus sets us free to be a generous people. And so we ask, Lord, that in the coming days, weeks, months ahead, that you'd break us free from the love of money. We all fall into it so easily by astonishing us with the fact that we are your treasure so that you become ours and we become rich towards you. We ask this for Jesus' sake. Amen.